It's Fully Threaded Radio.
Hi, everybody. This isn't a full episode of the podcast, but I wanted to get it out as soon as possible. This is a conversation with Jason Wagner and Ilyan Dimitrov of Richard Mano. They're a precision manufacturer out in West Babylon, New York. It's just east of New York City. A lot of you know them, or you've met them at the Vegas show if you're not in their area, but good shop. They got hit with the coronavirus pretty bad, and I got a call from Carm just after we published the last episode. He said, oh boy, you have to talk to these guys. So I reached out, we talked, and it's a very powerful conversation recorded April 22nd. I think one of the reasons that I really felt strongly about getting this out as soon as possible is because I just heard from Jake over at the Midwest Fastener Association. They had a meeting, a Zoom meeting of the board, and it seems like everyone's in a similar position. In other words, they're searching for best practices and putting together an action plan for how to conduct business during this time of uncertainty. I guess that's a pretty good way of saying what we're experiencing right now. This discussion with Jason and Ilyan doesn't go off into a lot of the areas that these COVID conversations seem to inevitably go, but we touch really just on the experience of what happened and what was it like as guys were going down in their shop. And well, the conversation speaks for itself, so you can hear. And then they do make some recommendations as a result of their experience. But there are a couple of themes, a few lessons to be drawn from this. And the first one is that everyone's learning as we go. It could be a government bureaucracy, or it could be a fastener manufacturer or distributor. We're feeling it along as we go. So you're not alone if you're trying to figure it out as you go. Also, probably the most important takeaway from the conversation is that if you were to get sick, the chances are very good that you'll keep going. Richard Mano worked and produced throughout the worst of what they experienced. Hopefully that's the last of their exposure to this thing. Nobody knows that for sure, but if it is, they kept working. And the output, it sounds like, was pretty strong. So that's something to be said. It didn't shut them down. And being right there in New York, if you're not in New York, it seems like from the news and from the headlines that I read, I mean, it's the end of the world there, but clearly it's survivable if you're there. Again, another reason I thought this would be a valuable perspective to share with you folks. You'll also hear several references to the fear that spread among the employees, and I think we've all experienced this to a certain extent. You can't go into a grocery store or a Home Depot or something and see people standing around with masks and looking at each other kind of, you know, suspiciously. Are you infected? It's a very unusual and frightening experience. Nobody has been prepared for this. So again, when you compare notes with somebody who's been in the belly of the beast, so to speak, it's reassuring. So again, the conversation basically speaks for itself. I hope you find it useful, possibly comforting, and perhaps you'll take away a few practical tips as well. As the conversation winds down, Jason and Ilyan both express their desire to see a whole lot more testing. And I can completely understand why they say that, and it's very reasonable. I don't personally support blanket testing. I don't think it's practical. I don't think it's advisable for a lot of reasons. It is in others. Once again, here we have a huge open topic that we'll be addressing as life continues. On episode 153, our next Fully Threaded Radio episode, and well after that too. So no shortage of conversation topics as we go forward. And a lot of them, folks, are going to be much more predominantly fastener related. At least that's my hope. But this time, we're going to really take you in for a look at what happened at Richard Mano Company as they battled the coronavirus. Richard Mano Company is based in West Babylon, New York. Jason Wagner is the executive vice president over there, and Ilyan Dimitrov is general manager there with us. Guys, thanks for hopping in for a conversation on this whole virus situation.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
It's a dramatic story. I was looking, guys, on your website before we turned the recorder on, and I noticed that you guys are just east of the Apple and not too far from a place called Corona Park as well.
Unfortunate coincidence.
What are the odds? Well, let's just launch right into it. Jason, what happened? This is a big story. Everybody's involved to a certain extent, but you guys are right in the thick of it.
Yeah, absolutely. First off, obviously, we started hearing the news coming out of China and coming out of, as it started to spread to some other countries, namely Italy, and, started to wonder, we had news reports that it was just, like the flu, wasn't going to have a big impact, not to be worried about it. We weren't really sure, but we started to prepare a little bit. And even early on, all the hand sanitizer and also other forms of personal protection, they started to kind of disappear from the shelves, all the gloves, all the masks, and became very difficult to get that kind of thing. So we just started doing our research and looking out to what else we could potentially buy to protect the people here. So we first went on to eBay. All the hand sanitizer sales were actually stopped there. So the next best thing, we started ordering bulk alcohol. So it's the 99% isopropyl alcohol. We figured we could put them in some spray bottles throughout the shop, be able to spray down the equipment, spray down the hands, be able to disinfect as needed to try to help, if we did encounter a case at the shop, hopefully that it would be limited to maybe one person and they would go home and, we could stop the spread and continue business as usual. As we started to get further along, there were some reported cases here. And, even with the masks and the gloves and the alcohol and other forms of protection, unfortunately, it spread throughout the shop and we had numerous positive cases. And the next thing we knew, whether it was because of fear or whether it was because of actual illnesses, we had a large percentage of the workforce didn't show up for the next 2 weeks. So we just kind of had to continue to monitor the situation, anticipated that a lot of the people had heard about the 2 weeks that was required payment for payroll through the CARES Act and hoped that once the 2 weeks passed that all those people would come back. During that time, sales had been great to start the year, January through February. It started to decline in the second half of February into March. And the past 3 weeks, we've seen a good 30% decline in sales, which with the reduced capacity due to the limited workforce, it kind of helped to offset us going too far behind our manufacturing schedules. But of course, it's never good to have a significant part of the workforce missing.
Yeah, that hurts. Now, you guys stayed open because you're in a very critical, or using the term of the day, essential part of the fastener industry, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the questions that we had in the beginning when we started here, and the governor talked about all the non-essential personnel needed to stay home, or you needed to initially reduce the workforce by 50%, then it went to 75%, then 100% of the non-essential. So we had to figure out first and foremost, are we essential? What does that mean for us? So we, we're watching the governor talk. We went on the webinars. We contacted the governor's office. We contacted numerous branches of the Department of State, and we really didn't get a complete answer from them. They kind of just kept on referring us to some generic language on a website. And that's when the letters started rolling in from numerous customers that were identifying that our business was essential because we were part of the supply chain for parts for the Department of Defense, as well as various medical devices. So based on the customer response, we were able to determine that we were in fact essential and that we needed to remain open. So we advised all of our employees that we were essential and that we would have to maintain business as usual, or as much business as usual as possible. And we handed out some letters as to what people should do and different contact information if they started to feel ill, if they were exposed to somebody else, that they were advised to stay home and not bring the virus to the shop and infect or risk infecting other people.
You were very proactive in the steps that you took. You did everything that is being advised to do. I mean, that's pretty clear. But nevertheless, there was an outbreak within the company. And when did this happen? And how many of your staff actually were directly affected by that?
It's hard to tell exactly how many people were directly affected, because we know that we probably had about 7 or 8 positive cases within the shop. That was starting about 3 weeks ago, maybe 3 to 4 weeks ago. It started the first case that we heard of, and then some additional people had, been concerned. So we called the company to do a fogging over the weekend to make sure that anybody that had been here that was infected, that would kill any of the virus that was still present, and try to take some different safety measures to ensure the safety of the people that were here or that were going to remain here. And then that next week, we started to get numerous people that were out. And then I think that the fear factor kind of set in, and we didn't necessarily get all of the doctor's notes or anything that suggested that all the people that were out had contracted the illness, but just kind of accepted the fact that through the CARES Act, we were responsible for paying for 2 weeks or up to 2 weeks for each employee, and just said, you know what, let's bite the bullet. Let's allow the people to stay out for those 2 weeks. We paid them, and then just hope for the best and that they would return. So while we did have a significant portion of the workforce out, that roughly was about 30 people to 40 people, we only know for sure of about 6 or 7 positive tests.
Now that's the fear factor really sets in there. Ilian, you're the GM over there. What was your spin on all this while it was happening?
Well, we kind of got lucky because we have two different buildings, and the infections were mostly, if not all of them, were in our what we call old building. Our CNC building with all of our CNC equipment and ESCOMatics didn't get affected at all. So we were still able to push a lot of product out. And luckily, the product that was kind of like the hottest at the time was being made at our CNC building. So while we took a big hit on the number of employees missing, we were still able to ship product on time. And we took some very hot orders, 1 week lead time, 3 days lead time, expedite fees, you name it. But I'm sure that during this crisis, we must have saved some lives out there, or at least hope so. I personally got affected as well. My family got the virus as well.
Yeah, that's a really, really dramatic aspect of this whole story. So simultaneously, things were melting down at the Dimitrov household, right? So what happened?
Well, it's pretty much all started on March 16th. I woke up getting ready to work, and my wife is, something's wrong. I don't feel well. She checked her temperature, and here we go. She had 102 fever, pain in the body, sore throat, some of the symptoms of the virus. And I immediately called the office. I told him, I'm definitely not coming to the office. There's something going on here. Just bring me my computer. I'm going to be working from home for the time being until I find out what's going on with her. My wife went to the doctor. They told her, you'll be fine. There's nothing wrong with you. It's probably not the virus. And even if it is, we don't have testing available. So that's the first time it kind of struck me that we're not prepared for what's coming our way.
Let me get this straight. You're in New York, and this happened when? What was the date?
March 16th.
Wow. And at that point, there was no testing available for you?
There was no testing. They told her the testing is available only for severe cases, people who are hospitalized. And they pretty much told her, go home, and you should be fine. We waited. Later that day, my wife was able to do a teleconference with a doctor. And believe it or not, they told her that she probably has a strep throat. Without testing her, without doing anything, they prescribe antibiotic and they refuse to see her in the office. So my wife pretty much was on antibiotic, undiagnosed, hoping that it's a strep throat. She was immediately isolated in a room, in a different room in the house, because I have two little children and a mother-in-law who is 69 years old. So she was isolated from everybody for about a week. She started feeling better. Everything was fine. And we were, business back to normal. I went back to work the following week. I was out of the office for the whole week, but the following week I came back to work. And things seemed to be okay. But a couple of days later, my two-year-old daughter got fever and a pink eye. So then we started to really worry about what was going on. Again, the doctor refused to see the baby. Testing was not available. they told us just go home, give her Tylenol, she should be fine. Luckily, she was fine after a few days, but then the drama continued. My mother-in-law started feeling sick. She got a sore throat and started coughing a little bit. That time, I decided again to work from home so I don't expose anyone to potentially to the virus in the office. I was managing to work from home. I was kind of lucky that we were functioning in the shop to some extent, and I was doing mostly quoting and some kind of navigating the people and the reports and things like that. So my mother-in-law got sick. Then I started feeling the symptoms. And during this whole time, we were not able to get a doctor's appointment and we were not able to get tested.
Why is that, do you think?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I still don't know. I don't think we were prepared. I don't think anyone could have prepared for something like that. I think it just came out of nowhere. We've had some outbreaks in the past, whether it was in China, whether it was in Africa, and it never kind of got to us. But I think this time, nobody knew that this was going to happen.
Well, to read the headlines from outside of New York, it's as though every hospital is overloaded and so forth. And I was just wondering if there was no capacity or exactly what was happening here. And I think a lot of people in the audience are wondering the same thing. So your story is quite interesting because, let's face it, many people don't know anyone directly affected. Let me ask you, between the family and the shop, were there any very severe cases? And also, is everyone recovered now?
I can tell you that we have one of our employees. I know for a fact that he was in the hospital and he's recovering home. And he's one of the first people who got sick. He's a little bit older, probably in the mid-50s. I can tell you that my mother-in-law got sick and she's still not 100%. She was in bed for almost 15 days with one or two fever and severe pain in her body and cough and you name it. Anything horrible that can happen to a person when they're sick, she got it. She's still not 100%. She's still feeling sick certain days she's better, certain days she has no energy left. My wife was pretty sick too for about a week. And a friend of mine from Brooklyn, he got it pretty bad. And he's a young guy, 30 years old. He was in bed for almost 2 weeks with chest pains and high fever.
Jason, how do you react to this? How do you manage a company that is operating on fear? And let's face it, a lot of people who simply aren't coming to work because of that, but also the ones who are sick. What do you do?
Well, we just had to, it's a situation that we haven't encountered before. I don't think anyone's really encountered it before. So you just kind of have to go day by day and figure it out on the fly. And we put in some protocols in place, at least in the office, because the office was able to work from home or work remotely on some days, because, you know, obviously we can't do that with the machine shop, but we're able to kind of do some social distancing protocols in the office so we didn't have it spread too much in here. There was one other person in the office that did get infected. And what we would do was set up a schedule to try to maybe have half of the office staff in at a time, and then the other half would be at home that day with the computer and everything set up. And then our computer company, our IT company, was actually pretty helpful in getting us additional laptops and additional VPNs to set up to be able to get into our system and be able to work remotely. So they were actually kind of ahead of that and preparing us, you know, in the event that we had to do that. So that was actually set up. Once the infection started to happen, we were pretty much able to make that switch and just had to set up the schedules and start to have people work remotely. Really, at that time, you just have to try to control it, try to do whatever you can, and try to stop the spread as much as possible. Whether, you know, there's some people out there that they hear that it's kind of a media hoax. There's other people that are in fear for their lives, that they think that if they get it, it's a death sentence. Regardless of where you are on the spectrum, whatever you think, whatever you feel, you can't predict how other people are going to behave in a situation like this. So,
great point.
My advice to other people out there, other managers, other, you know, people that are kind of in charge of another business, would be to take necessary steps now if they haven't been adversely affected by it, at least in terms of infections. Start doing things that you know, get the personal protection equipment. It's not that easy to come by right now. Get some alcohol, get some masks, get some gloves. Start having the people wear the gloves, start having the people wear the masks. If they do get an infection in their shop, maybe they can limit it to one person and send that person home. One of the additional things is we have non-contact thermometers that we've been scanning people's foreheads when they come into work. Make sure if anyone has a fever, we can send them home. Send out information to those employees, have it posted throughout the shop. Make sure that they can take some personal responsibility. And if they're not feeling well, that they stay home. They take it upon themselves to kind of take themselves out. But, you know, in terms of just coping, We continue to purchase personal protective equipment and supply it to our employees. We just kind of focus on putting the hot jobs to the head of the line, and you know, just try to make sure that we do whatever we can in order to continue to produce. Luckily, we also are a stocking manufacturer. We do have about 4,000 SKUs in stock, so a lot of the orders that were coming in, we were still able to ship from stock, and thankfully, our shipping department didn't get dramatically affected. So we're able to maintain a shipping schedule on a reduced capacity anyway. And, you know, just you got to learn on the fly and take it day by day and don't overreact and just anticipate that we said that probably we were going to lose a significant part of the staff for that 2-week period. And we did. And now people are starting to come back. We still are adversely affected because we still have certain areas of the shop that we do have limited personnel. So we put out ads on Craigslist. We put out ads on some certain local newspapers to try to just bring bodies into the shop, just make sure that we can continue to function as normal or as close to normal as possible.
You know, with all the headlines about unemployment and layoffs and things, and you're looking for bodies, are you getting responses to those want ads?
We are in a limited capacity. I think that one of the other things going on right now is the so-called super unemployment, where people are making additional money on top of what they would have under the normal unemployment circumstances. So it's hard to lure people in from off their couch, especially with the fear factor involved. They can sit home and make just as much money, if not more, by not actually having to get out into the workforce and potentially risk subjecting themselves to it or their family members to it. And, you know, I can't necessarily say that I blame them. I understand that you got to keep your family as safe as possible, and it would be heartbreaking to potentially get infected and bring it home to someone that you love, and God forbid something severe happens to them. So I understand it, and that's why I'm not getting angry with the people that aren't showing up, but we also have to do what we have to do in order to keep the company going.
Absolutely. Well, the fear factor is definitely a real thing, and the anecdote for fear is courage, and it sounds like you're operating on a very courageous basis, so hats off to you in that regard. Ilian, your family, I hope the best for them and that they're making full recoveries as well.
We're getting there. I'm recovered. My two kids are fine. My wife is fine. My mother-in-law is close to being fine. Friends of mine, they recovered. We unfortunately found out today that one of our employees' mother has passed away in a nursing home in New Jersey. We still don't know the exact reason for that, but she had fever and there was a few confirmed cases in the nursing home. So he's definitely in our prayers today, and hopefully that there's some kind of closure to what happened and how she passed away. I also wanted to add a little bit about testing. This is a very painful subject right now in New York and elsewhere in the country. Jason was actually able to get some tests off the internet right before they stopped selling them to the public. And we were actually able to test myself. He tested himself and a couple of other employees in the shop. And I actually showed antibodies, which is definitely a sign that I had the virus, but that shows you that if testing was available, we can go back to normal much faster than anticipated, because if we know who is sick, if we know who had it, we can put the people who had it back to work and isolate the other ones until there's a cure, until there is a vaccine, or you name it. I don't want that to sound as a cliche. I know it's all over the news. I know everybody's talking about it, but I can tell you firsthand, if we had tests available right now, we would have probably had most of our employees that are healthy back to work and not have them sit home and wonder Am I going to get it from the guy who works next to me? Am I going to get it on the way to work if I'm riding with somebody in the car? And so on and so on.
Who would have thought when you started your career out in fasteners that you would also need to be an epidemiologist, you know, or a biologist, whatever it is. I mean, you have to understand the antibody response to all of this and be able to interpret all that. It's not simple and it's not a straightforward proposition. Thus, one of the reasons that it is such a sticky topic right now. But I fully understand your perspective on that. And I bring it back to, I'm just glad that you're better. Your family's better. Our condolences to your employee who lost the family member. Of course, that seems like it has a question mark hanging over it too, but it's a messy situation. And one way or another, I'm just very glad that Richard Mano is doing what it's doing. You have come onto the podcast to share your story today. You didn't have to do that. I think a lot of companies are going to find this a very valuable story. And, it was very good of you to do.
Thank you.
I would just like to add one other thing, because I don't think that Ilion had actually explicitly mentioned it. Later on, his wife and mother-in-law did get a test, I believe at a drive-through facility, and did test positive for the virus. So it wasn't just speculation based off of potential, you know, symptoms that they had. It was actually confirmed that they did have it. And as Ilion had stated, that he did test positive through the antibody test that I wound up getting online. So they are confirmed cases and not just speculation. I had been sick for about a week, maybe 10 days with cold symptoms. And I was another person. I went to the city MD to get a test and they told me, yeah, you might have it, but you're not sick enough to test. So the testing is really key. And not to make this a political statement or anything, but without knowing which people have it and the number of cases that are in your area or in, you know, the America in general, we can't really respond accordingly without having all the data.
Yeah, that's a recurring theme all the way across this story. And we're going to be kicking it around for a long time, that I know. Well, gentlemen, we don't want to let you run off without learning just a little bit more about Richard Mano, that's for sure. I'm glad somebody's keeping those brownies humming over there. And I was looking online. You've got a real, real lineup of expertise, a very solid company. What's next, Ilion?
What's next is we're probably going to expand our CNC capabilities. We recognize that in crisis like that, the CNC machines are the ones that carried us through this. If we didn't have those machines, if we didn't have the automatic equipment to draw parts complete, we would have been in much bigger trouble. Definitely, this is the direction we're going in. We've discussed robots in the past. We've discussed automation. I feel that this whole crisis is actually going to make the country and the manufacturing sector in the United States much better, much stronger. A lot of our colleagues in the industry are talking about reshoring parts. And whether it happens or it doesn't, I don't know yet. But if it does, we want to be prepared. And once things get better, we're definitely looking into expanding, especially in CNC and robotics and automatics and things like that. Not to mention that, you know, I'm not saying that we're not going to hire more people. I just want to make sure we can sustain crises like that in the future.
Jason?
Just a little bit more about the company. You had mentioned the brownies. Ilion had mentioned some of the CNC capabilities. The company's been in business about 40 years. We started off with just the old cam style Swiss automatics, and we have about 70 of those still today. In the old shop, as Ilion mentioned earlier in the conversation, that's where we have the Swiss automatic cam machines, the Brown and Sharps, and we have a complete secondary. So we have the old manual hard-inch lathes. We have thread rolling capabilities, automatic transfer machines. We have centerless grinding capabilities. We have automatic slotters, you name it, kind of complete secondary processes here. And then another building. We just purchased that building in the end of 2016. By the start of 2017, we only had 5 CNC Swiss, and we just recently acquired our 17th. So we're really starting to make a push in that direction and continue to expand. And that's the direction that we'll continue to go. It not only helps us make parts that we couldn't make before, but it makes us competitive on the longer running jobs that we would tend to lose out on because of the numerous secondary operations by just machining them off the old cam style screw machines. and then had to have so many manual operations. So it's really helped us come from just the job shop prototypes up to 5 to 10,000 piece runs to the full runs for various customers. We've been taking orders in excess of 100 to 200,000 piece quantities as well. So that's certainly helping us. And as Elian said, kind of kept us on the map and didn't have give us such a severe impact that this coronavirus could have had, had we not had those machines and had the ability to manufacture with a limited number of employees present.
Well, it sounds like Richard Mano is ready to make a full recovery and also ready for the reshoring wave. Glad you brought that into the conversation, Ilian. We've been speaking with Jason Wagner and Ilian Dimitrov of Richard Mano. Gentlemen, I thank you so much for speaking with us today. This has been really probably one of the most important conversations I've been able to have with people in the industry, and I just can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And for anybody that hasn't been impacted, just prepare as much as possible now. Hopefully this thing is kind of on the back end and we'll all see the light at the end of the tunnel soon.
And if you don't mind, I would like to take a moment to thank our partners in the industries who were able to help us during this crisis. We actually had to speak to some of our friends in the industry, other manufacturers who did help us manage this.
You can reach out to Jason or Ilian through the website richardmano.com. They're easy to find. Gentlemen, once again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Fully Threaded Radio is a production of Fasteners Clearinghouse. Music provided by Audionautix.